over her breasts. "I do too," he said, and hugged her. 16. Danny. Down the hall, in the bedroom, Wendy could hear the typewriter Jack had carried up from downstairs burst into life for 30 seconds, fall silent for a minute or two, and then rattle briefly again. It was like listening to machine gun fire from an isolated pillbox. The sound was music to her ears. Jack had not been writing so steadily since the second year of their marriage, when he wrote the story that Esquire had purchased. He said he thought the play would be done by the end of the year, for better or worse, and he would be moving on to something new. He said he didn't care if the little school stirred any excitement when Phyllis showed it around, didn't care if it sank without a trace, and Wendy believed that too. The actual act of his writing made her immensely hopeful, not because she expected great things from the play, but because her husband seemed to be slowly closing a huge door on a room full of monsters. He had had his shoulder to that door for a long time now, but at last it was swinging shut. Every key typed closed it a little more. "Look, Dick, look." Danny was hunched over the first of the 5 battered primers Jack had dug up by culling mercilessly through Boulder's myriad second-hand bookshops. They would take Danny right up to the second-grade reading level, a program she had told Jack she thought was much too ambitious. Their son was intelligent, they knew that, but it would be a mistake to push him too far, too fast. Jack had agreed. There would be no pushing involved. But if the kid caught on fast, they would be prepared. And now she wondered if Jack hadn't been right about that, too. Danny, prepared by 4 years of Sesame Street and 3 years of Electric Company, seemed to be catching on with almost scary speed. It bothered her. He hunched over the innocuous little books, his crystal radio and balsa glider on the shelf above him, as though his life depended on learning to read. His small face was more tense and paler than she liked, in the close and cozy glow of the goosenecked lamp they had put in his room. He was taking it very seriously, both the reading and the workbook pages his father made up for him every afternoon. Picture of an apple and a peach, the word apple written beneath in Jack's large, neatly made printing. Circle the right picture, the one that went with the word. And their son would stare from the word to the pictures, his lips moving, sounding out, actually sweating it out. And with his double-sized red pencil curled into his pudgy right fist, he could now write about 3 dozen words on his own. His finger traced slowly under the words in the reader. Above them was a picture Wendy half remembered from her own grammar school days, 19 years before. A laughing boy with brown curly hair, a girl in a short dress, her hair in blonde ringlets, one hand holding a jump rope, a prancing dog running after a large red rubber ball. The first grade trinity, Dick, Jane, and Jip. "See, Jip, run," Danny read slowly. "Run, Jip, run. Run, run, run." He paused, dropping his finger down a line. "See the..." He bent closer, his nose almost touching the page now. "See the..." "Not so close, Doc," Wendy said quietly. "You'll hurt your eyes." "It's..." "Don't tell me," he said, sitting up with a jerk. His voice was alarmed. "Don't tell me, Mommy, I can get it." "All right, honey," she said. "But it's not a big thing, really, it's not." Unheeding, Danny bent forward again. On his face was an expression that might be more commonly seen hovering over a graduate record exam in a college gym somewhere. She liked it less and less. "See the... b-all-l. See the b-all-l-l? See the ball." "Ball!" Suddenly triumphant, fierce. The fierceness in his voice scared her. "See the ball!" "That's right," she said. "Honey, I think that's enough for tonight. A couple more pages, Mommy, please." "No, Doc." She closed the red-bound book firmly. "It's bedtime." "Please?" "Don't tease me about it, Danny. Mommy's tired." "Okay." But he looked longingly at the primer. "Go kiss your father and then wash up. Don't forget to brush." "Yeah." He slouched out, a small boy in pajama bottoms with feet and a large flannel top with a football on the front and New England Patriots written on the back. Jack's typewriter stopped and she heard Danny's hearty smack. "Night, Daddy." "Good night, Doc. How'd you do?" "Okay, I guess. Mommy made me stop." Mommy was right. It's past 8:30. Going to the bathroom?
Yeah.
Good. There's potatoes growing out of your ears. And onions, and carrots, and chives, and... Danny's giggle, fading, then cut off by the firm click of the bathroom door. He was private about his bathroom functions, while both she and Jack were pretty much catch-as-catch-can. Another sign, and they were multiplying all the time, that there was another human being in the place, not just a carbon copy of one of them or a combination of both. It made her a little sad. Someday her child would be a stranger to her, and she would be strange to him. But not as strange as her own mother had become to her. Please don't let it be that way, God. Let him grow up and still love his mother. Jack's typewriter began its irregular bursts again. Still sitting in the chair beside Danny's reading table, she let her eyes wander around her son's room. The glider's wing had been neatly mended. His desk was piled high with picture books, coloring books, old Spider-Man comic books with the covers half torn off, Crayolas, and an untidy pile of Lincoln logs. The VW model was neatly placed above these lesser things, its shrink wrap still undisturbed. He and his father would be putting it together tomorrow night, or the night after, if Danny went on at this rate, and never mind the end of the week. His pictures of Pooh and Eeyore and Christopher Robin were tacked neatly to the wall, soon enough to be replaced with pin-ups and photographs of dope-smoking rock singers, she supposed. Innocence to experience. Human nature, baby. Grab it and growl. Still, it made her sad. Next year he would be in school, and she would lose at least half of him, maybe more, to his friends. She and Jack had tried to have another one for a while when things had seemed to be going well at Stovington, but she was on the pill again now. Things were too uncertain. God knew where they would be in 9 months. Her eyes fell on the wasp's nest. It held the ultimate high place in Danny's room, resting on a large plastic plate on the table by his bed. She didn't like it, even if it was empty. She wondered vaguely if it might have germs, thought to ask Jack, then decided he would laugh at her. But she would ask the doctor tomorrow if she could catch him with Jack out of the room. She didn't like the idea of that thing constructed from the chewings and saliva of so many alien creatures lying within a foot of her sleeping son's head. The water in the bathroom was still running, and she got up and went into the big bedroom to make sure everything was okay. Jack didn't look up. He was lost in the world he was making, staring at the typewriter, a filter cigarette clamped in his teeth. She knocked lightly on the closed bathroom door. "You okay, Doc? You awake?" No answer. "Danny?" No answer. She tried the door. It was locked. "Danny?" She was worried now. The lack of any sound beneath the steadily running water made her uneasy. "Danny, open the door, honey." No answer. "Danny!" "Jesus Christ, Wendy, I can't think if you're going to pound on the door all night." "Danny's locked himself in the bathroom and he doesn't answer me." Jack came around the desk, looking put out. He knocked on the door once, hard. "Open up, Danny, no games." No answer. Jack knocked harder. "Stop fooling, Doc. Bedtime's bedtime. Spanking if you don't open up." He's losing his temper, she thought, and was more afraid. He had not touched Danny in anger since that evening 2 years ago, but at this moment he sounded angry enough to do it. "Danny, honey," she began. No answer, only running water. "Danny, if you make me break this lock, I can guarantee you you'll spend the night sleeping on your belly," Jack warned. Nothing. "Break it," she said, and suddenly it was hard to talk. "Quick!" He raised one foot and brought it down hard against the door to the right of the knob. The lock was a poor thing. It gave immediately, and the door shuddered open, banging the tiled bathroom wall and rebounding halfway. "Danny!" she screamed. The water was running full force in the basin. Beside it, a tube of Crest with the cap off. Danny was sitting on the rim of the bathtub across the room, his toothbrush clasped limply in his left hand, a thin foam of toothpaste around his mouth. He was staring, trance-like, into the mirror on the front of the medicine cabinet above the wash basin. The expression on his face was one of drugged horror, and her first thought was that he was having some sort of epileptic seizure, that he might have swallowed his tongue. "Danny!" Danny didn't answer. Guttural sounds came from his throat. Then she was pushed aside so hard that she crashed into the towel rack, and Jack was kneeling in front of the boy. "Danny," he said. "Danny! Danny!" He snapped his fingers in front of Danny's blank eyes.
Sure, Danny said. "Tournament play. Stroke. Nur."
"Danny,
Roke!
Danny said, his voice suddenly deep, almost manlike.
Roke! Stroke! The Roke mallet has two sides. Gah! Oh, Jack, my God, what's wrong with him?
Jack grabbed the boy's elbows and shook him hard. Danny's head rolled limply backward and then snapped forward like a balloon on a stick.
Roke! Stroke! Red rum!
Jack shook him again, and Danny's eyes suddenly cleared. His toothbrush fell out of his hand and onto the tiled floor with a small click.
What?
He asked, looking around. He saw his father kneeling before him, Wendy standing by the wall.
What?
Danny asked again with rising alarm.
Don't stutter!
Jack suddenly screamed into his face. Danny cried out in shock, his body going tense, trying to draw away from his father, and then he collapsed into tears. Stricken, Jack pulled him close.
Oh, honey. I'm sorry, Doc. Please don't cry. I'm sorry. Everything's okay.
The water ran ceaselessly in the basin, and Wendy felt that she had suddenly stepped into some grinding nightmare where time ran backward. Backward to the time when her drunken husband had broken her son's arm and had then mewled over him in almost the exact same words. Oh, honey, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Doc. Please. So sorry. She ran to them both, pried Danny out of Jack's arms somehow. She saw the look of angry reproach on his face, but filed it away for later consideration, and lifted him up. She walked him back into the small bedroom, Danny's arms clasped around her neck, Jack trailing them. She sat down on Danny's bed and rocked him back and forth, soothing him with nonsensical words repeated over and over. She looked up at Jack, and there was only worry in his eyes now. He raised questioning eyebrows at her. She shook her head faintly.
Danny, she said. Danny? Danny, it's okay, Doc. It's fine.
At last, Danny was quiet, only faintly trembling in her arms. Yet it was Jack he spoke to first, Jack who was now sitting beside them on the bed, and she felt the old, faint pang, it's him first and it's always been him first, of jealousy. Jack had shouted at him. She had comforted him. Yet it was to his father that Danny said,
I'm sorry if I was bad.
Nothing to be sorry for, Doc. Jack ruffled his hair.
What the hell happened in there?
Danny shook his head slowly, dazedly.
I don't know. Why did you tell me to stop stuttering, Daddy? I don't stutter.
Of course not, Jack said heartily, but Wendy felt a cold finger touch her heart. Jack suddenly looked scared, as if he'd seen something that might just have been a ghost.
Something about the timer,
Danny muttered.
What?
Jack was leaning forward, and Danny flinched in her arms.
Jack, you're scaring him,
she said, and her voice was high, accusatory. It suddenly came to her that they were all scared. But of what?
I don't know,
Danny was saying to his father.
What did I say, Daddy?
Nothing, Jack muttered. He took his handkerchief from his back pocket and wiped his mouth with it. Wendy had a moment of that sickening time is running backward feeling again. It was a gesture she remembered well from his drinking days.
Why did you lock the door, Danny?
She asked gently.
Why did you do that? Tony, he said. Tony told me to.
They exchanged a glance over the top of his head.
Did Tony say why, son?
Jack asked quietly.
I was brushing my teeth and I was thinking about my reading, Danny said. Thinking real hard. And I saw Tony way down in the mirror. He said he had to show me again.
You mean he was behind you? Wendy asked.
No, he was in the mirror.
Danny was very emphatic on this point.
Way down deep. And then I went through the mirror. The next thing I remember, Daddy was shaking me, and I thought I was being bad again.
Jack winced as if struck. No, Doc, he said quietly.
Tony told you to lock the door?
Wendy asked, brushing his hair.
Yes. And what did he want to show you?
Danny tensed in her arms. It was as if the muscles in his body had turned into something like piano wire.
I don't remember, he said, distraught. I don't remember. Don't ask me. I don't remember nothing.
Shh, Wendy said, alarmed. She began to rock him again.
It's all right if you don't remember, hon. Sure it is.
At last, Danny began to relax again.
Do you want me to stay a little while, read you a story? No, just the nightlight.
He looked shyly at his father.
Would you stay, Daddy, for a minute?
Sure, Doc. Wendy sighed.
I'll be in the living room, Jack.
Okay. She got up and watched as Danny slid under the covers. He seemed very small.
Are you sure you're okay, Danny?
I'm okay. Just plug in Snoopy, Mom.
Sure. She plugged in the nightlight, which showed Snoopy lying fast asleep on top of his doghouse. He had never wanted a nightlight until they moved into the Overlook, and then he had specifically requested one. She turned off the lamp in the overhead and looked back at them, the small white circle of Danny's face, and Jack's above it. She hesitated a moment, and then I went through the mirror, and then left them quietly.
You sleepy? Jack asked, brushing Danny's hair off his forehead.
Yeah.
Want a drink of water?
No.
There was silence for 5 minutes. Danny was still beneath his hand. Thinking the boy had dropped off, he was about to get up and leave quietly, when Danny said from the brink of sleep,
Roke.
Jack turned back, all zero at the bone.
Danny?
You'd never hurt Mommy, would you, Daddy?
No.
Or me?
No.
Silence again, spinning out.
Daddy?
What?
Tony came and told me about Roke.
Did he, Doc? What did he say?
I don't remember much, except he said it was in innings, like baseball. Isn't that funny?
Yes.
Jack's heart was thudding dully in his chest.
How could the boy possibly know a thing like that?
Roke was played by innings, not like baseball, but like cricket.
Daddy?
He was almost asleep now.
What? What's Red Drum?
Red Drum?
Sounds like something an Indian might take on the warpath.
Silence.
Hey, Doc?
But Danny was asleep, breathing in long, slow strokes. Jack sat looking down at him for a moment, and a rush of love pushed through him like tidal water. Why had he yelled at the boy like that? It was perfectly normal for him to stutter a little. He had been coming out of a daze or some weird kind of trance, and stuttering was perfectly normal under those circumstances. Perfectly. And he hadn't said timer at all. It had been something else. Nonsense. Gibberish. How had he known Roke was played in innings? Had someone told him? Ullman? Halloran? He looked down at his hands. They were made into tight, clenched fists of tension. God, how I need a drink. And the nails were digging into his palms like tiny brands. Slowly he forced them to open.
I love you, Danny, he whispered. God knows I do.
He left the room. He had lost his temper again, only a little, but enough to make him feel sick and afraid. A drink would blunt that feeling, oh yes. It would blunt that, something about the timer, and everything else. There was no mistake about those words at all, none. Each had come out clear as a bell. He paused in the hallway, looking back, and automatically wiped his lips with his handkerchief. Their shapes were only dark silhouettes in the glow of the nightlight. Wendy, wearing only panties, went to his bed and tucked him in again. He had kicked the covers back. Jack stood in the doorway, watching as she put her inner wrist against his forehead.
Is he feverish?
No.
She kissed his cheek.
Thank God you made that appointment, he said as she came back to the doorway.
You think that guy knows his stuff?
The checker said he was very good. That's all I know.
If there's something wrong, I'm going to send you and him to your mother's, Wendy.
No.
I know, he said, putting an arm around her, how you feel.
You don't know how I feel at all about her.
Wendy, there's no place else I can send you, you know that.
If you came, without this job, we're done, he said simply.
You know that.
Her silhouette nodded slowly. She knew it. When I had that interview with Ullman, I thought he was just blowing off his bazoo. Now I'm not so sure. Maybe I really shouldn't have tried this with you two along, 40 miles from nowhere.
I love you, she said. And Danny loves you even more, if that's possible.
He would have been heartbroken, Jack.
He will be if you send us away.
Don't make it sound that way.
If the doctor says there's something wrong, I'll look for a job in Sidewinder, she said. If I can't get one in Sidewinder, Danny and I will go to Boulder.
I can't go to my mother, Jack.
Not on those terms. Don't ask me.
I just can't.
I guess I know that.
Cheer up. Maybe it's nothing.
Maybe.
The appointment's at 2?
Yes.
Let's leave the bedroom door open, Wendy.
I want to.
but I think he'll sleep through now. But he didn't. Boom. 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 He fled the heavy, crashing, echoing sounds through twisting, maze-like corridors, his bare feet whispering over a deep-pile jungle of blue and black. Each time he heard the roque mallet smash into the wall somewhere behind him, he wanted to scream aloud, but he mustn't. He mustn't. A scream would give him away, and then Redrum, "Come out here and take your medicine, you fucking crybaby." Oh, and he could hear the owner of that voice coming for him, charging up the hall like a tiger in an alien blue-black jungle, a man-eater. "Come out here, you little son of a bitch!" If he could get to the stairs going down, if he could get off this third floor, he might be all right. Even the elevator, if he could remember what had been forgotten. But it was dark, and in his terror he had lost his orientation. He had turned down one corridor and then another, his heart leaping into his mouth like a hot lump of ice, fearing that each turn would bring him face to face with the human tiger in these halls. The booming was right behind him now, the awful, hoarse shouting, the whistle the head of the mallet made cutting through the air. Roque. Stroke. Roque, stroke, Redrum, before it crashed into the wall, the soft whisper of feet on the jungle carpet, panic squirting in his mouth like bitter juice. You will remember what was forgotten, but would he? What was it? He fled around another corner and saw with creeping, utter horror that he was in a cul-de-sac. Locked doors frowned down at him from three sides. The West Wing. He was in the West Wing, and outside he could hear the storm whooping and screaming, seeming to choke on its own dark throat filled with snow. He backed up against the wall, weeping with terror now, his heart racing like the heart of a rabbit caught in a snare. When his back was against the light blue silk wallpaper with the embossed pattern of wavy lines, his legs gave way, and he collapsed to the carpet, hands splayed on the jungle of woven vines and creepers, the breath whistling in and out of his throat. Louder. Louder. There was a tiger in the hall, and now the tiger was just around the corner, still crying out in that shrill and petulant and lunatic rage, the roque mallet slamming, because this tiger walked on two legs, and it was... He woke with a sudden indrawn gasp, sitting bolt upright in bed, eyes wide and staring into the darkness, hands crossed in front of his face. Something on one hand, crawling. Wasps. Three of them. They stung him then, seeming to needle all at once, and that was when all the images broke apart and fell on him in a dark flood, and he began to shriek into the dark, the wasps clinging to his left hand, stinging again and again. The lights went on, and Daddy was standing there in his shorts, his eyes glaring, Mommy behind him, sleepy and scared. "Get them off me!" Danny screamed. "Oh my God!" Jack said. He saw. "Jack, what's wrong with him? What's wrong?" He didn't answer her. He ran to the bed, scooped up Danny's pillow, and slapped Danny's thrashing left hand with it. Again. Again. Wendy saw lumbering, insectile forms rise into the air, droning. "Get a magazine!" he yelled over his shoulder. "Kill them!" "Wasps?" she said, and for a moment she was inside herself, almost detached in her realization. Then her mind cross-patched, and knowledge was connected to emotion. "Wasps!" "Oh, Jesus, Jack, you said—" "Shut the fuck up and kill them," he roared. "Will you do what I say?" One of them had landed on Danny's reading desk. She took a coloring book off his work table and slammed it down on the wasp. It left a viscous brown smear. "There's another one on the curtain," he said, and ran out past her with Danny in his arms. He took the boy into their bedroom and put him on Wendy's side of the makeshift double. "Lie right there, Danny. Don't come back until I tell you, understand?" His face puffed and streaked with tears. Danny nodded. "That's my brave boy." Jack ran back down the hall to the stairs. Behind him he heard the coloring book slap twice, and then his wife screamed in pain. He didn't slow but went down the stairs two by two into the darkened lobby. He went through Ullman's office into the kitchen, slamming the heavy part of his thigh into the corner of Ullman's oak desk, barely feeling it. He slapped on the kitchen overheads and crossed to the sink. The washed dishes from supper were still heaped up in the drainer, where Wendy had left them to drip dry. He snatched the big Pyrex bowl off the top. A dish fell to the floor and exploded. Ignoring it, he turned and ran back through the office and up the stairs. Wendy was standing outside Danny's door, breathing hard. Her face was the color of table linen. Her eyes were shiny and flat. Her hair hung damply against her neck. "I got all of them," she said dully, "but one stung me. Jack, you said they were all dead." She began to cry. He slipped past her without answering and carried the Pyrex bowl over to the nest by Danny's bed. It was still. Nothing there. On the outside, anyway. He slammed the bowl down over the nest. There, he said. Come on. They went back into their bedroom. Where did it get you? He asked her.
On my wrist.
Let's see. She showed it to him. Just above the bracelet of lines between wrist and palm, there was a small, circular hole. The flesh around it was puffing up. Are you allergic to stings? He asked. Think hard. If you are, Danny might be. The fucking little bastard's got him 5 or 6 times. No, she said more calmly. I just hate them, that's all. Hate them. Danny was sitting on the foot of the bed, holding his left hand and looking at them. His eyes, circled with the white of shock, looked at Jack reproachfully.
Daddy, you said you killed them all. My hand, it really hurts.
Let's see it, Doc. No, I'm not going to touch it. That would make it hurt even more. Just hold it out. He did, and Wendy moaned.
Oh, Danny. Oh, your poor hand.
Later, the doctor would count 11 separate stings. Now all they saw was a dotting of small holes, as if his palm and fingers had been sprinkled with grains of red pepper. The swelling was bad. His hand had begun to look like one of those cartoon images where Bugs Bunny or Daffy Duck had just slammed himself with a hammer. Wendy, go get that spray stuff in the bathroom, he said. She went after it, and he sat down next to Danny and slipped an arm around his shoulders. After we spray your hand, I want to take some Polaroids of it, Doc. Then you sleep the rest of the night with us, okay?
Sure, Danny said. But why are you going to take pictures?
So maybe we can sue the ass out of some people. Wendy came back with a spray tube in the shape of a chemical fire extinguisher.
This won't hurt, honey, she said, taking off the cap.
Danny held out his hand and she sprayed both sides until it gleamed. He let out a long, shuddery sigh.
Does it smart? She asked. No, feels better.
Now these, crunch them up. She held out 5 orange-flavored baby aspirin. Danny took them and popped them into his mouth one by one. Isn't that a lot of aspirin? Jack asked. It's a lot of stings. She snapped at him angrily. You go and get rid of that nest, John Torrance, right now. Just a minute. He went to the dresser and took his Polaroid square shooter out of the top drawer. He rummaged deeper and found some flash cubes.
Jack, what are you doing? She asked, a little hysterically. He's going to take some pictures of my hand, Danny said gravely. And then we're going to sue the ass out of some people. Right, Dad?
Right, Jack said grimly. He had found the flash attachment, and he jabbed it onto the camera. Hold it out, son. I figure about $5,000 a sting.
What are you talking about?
Wendy nearly screamed. I'll tell you what, he said. I followed the directions on that fucking bug bomb. We're going to sue them. The damn thing was defective. Had to have been. How else can you explain this?
Oh, she said in a small voice.
He took 4 pictures, pulling out each covered print for Wendy to time on the small locket watch she wore around her neck. Danny, fascinated with the idea that his stung hand might be worth thousands and thousands of dollars, began to lose some of his fright and take an active interest. The hand throbbed dully, and he had a small headache. When Jack had put the camera away and spread the prints out on top of the dresser to dry, Wendy said, "Should we take him to the doctor tonight?" "Not unless he's really in pain," Jack said. If a person has a strong allergy to wasp venom, it hits within 30 seconds.
Hits? What do you...
A coma, or convulsions.
Oh. Oh, my Jesus.
She cupped her hands over her elbows and hugged herself, looking pale and wan. How do you feel, son? Think you could sleep? Danny blinked at them. The nightmare had faded to a dull, featureless background in his mind, but he was still frightened.
If I can sleep with you...
Of course, Wendy said.
Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. It's okay, Mommy.
She began to cry again, and Jack put his hands on her shoulders. Wendy, I swear to you that I followed the directions.
Will you get rid of it in the morning, please?
Of course I will. The 3 of them got in bed together, and Jack was about to snap off the light over the bed when he paused and pushed the covers back instead. Want a picture of the nest, too.
Come right back.
I will. He went to the dresser, got the camera and the last flash cube, and gave Danny a closed thumb and forefinger circle. Danny smiled and gave it back with his good hand. Quite a kid, he thought, as he walked down to Danny's room. All of that and then some. The overhead was still on. Jack crossed to the bunk setup, and as he glanced at the table beside it, his skin crawled into goose flesh. The short hairs on his neck prickled, and tried to stand erect. He could hardly see the nest through the clear Pyrex bowl. The inside of the glass was crawling with wasps. It was hard to tell how many, 50 at least, maybe 100. His heart thudding slowly in his chest, he took his pictures and then set the camera down to wait for them to develop. He wiped his lips with the palm of his hand. One thought played over and over in his mind, echoing with, "You lost your temper, you lost your temper, you lost your temper," an almost superstitious dread. They had come back. He had killed the wasps, but they had come back. In his mind, he heard himself screaming into his frightened, crying son's face, "Don't stutter!" He wiped his lips again. He went to Danny's work table, rummaged in its drawers, and came up with a big jigsaw puzzle with a fiberboard backing. He took it over to the bed table and carefully slid the bowl and the nest onto it. The wasps buzzed angrily inside their prison. Then, putting his hand firmly on top of the bowl so it wouldn't slip, he went out into the hall.
"Coming to bed, Jack?" Wendy asked. "Coming to bed, Daddy?"
"Have to go downstairs for a minute," he said, making his voice light.
How had it happened? How in God's name?
The bomb sure hadn't been a dud. He had seen the thick white smoke start to puff out of it when he had pulled the ring. And when he had gone up 2 hours later, he had shaken a drift of small dead bodies out of the hole in the top.
Then how? Spontaneous regeneration?
That was crazy. 17th-century bullshit. Insects didn't regenerate. And even if wasp eggs could mature full-grown insects in 12 hours, this wasn't the season in which the queen laid. That happened in April or May. Fall was their dying time. A living contradiction. The wasps buzzed furiously under the bowl. He took them downstairs and through the kitchen. In back there was a door which gave on the outside. A cold night wind blew against his nearly naked body, and his feet went numb almost instantly against the cold concrete of the platform he was standing on, the platform where milk deliveries were made during the hotel's operating season. He put the puzzle and the bowl down carefully, and when he stood up, he looked at the thermometer nailed outside the door. "Fresh up with 7 up, the thermometer said, and the mercury stood at an even 25 degrees. The cold would kill them by morning. He went in and shut the door firmly. After a moment's thought, he locked it, too. He crossed the kitchen again and shut off the lights. He stood in the darkness for a moment, thinking, wanting a drink. Suddenly the hotel seemed full of 1,000 stealthy sounds, creakings and groans, and the sly sniff of the wind under the eaves where more wasps' nests might be hanging, like deadly fruit. They had come back. And suddenly he found that he didn't like the overlook so well anymore. As if it wasn't wasps that had stung his son, wasps that had miraculously lived through the bug bomb assault, but the hotel itself. His last thought before going upstairs to his wife and son, "From now on you will hold your temper, no matter what," was firm and hard and sure. As he went down the hall to them, he wiped his lips with the back of his hand. 17. The doctor's office. Stripped to his underpants, lying on the examination table, Danny Torrance looked very small. He was looking up at Dr. Just Call Me Bill Edmonds, who was wheeling a large black machine up beside him. Danny rolled his eyes to get a better look at it.
"Don't let it scare you, guy," Bill Edmonds said. "It's an electroencephalograph, and it doesn't hurt."
"Electro?
We call it EEG for short. I'm going to hook a bunch of wires to your head. No, not stick them in, only tape them. And the pens in this part of the gadget will record your brain waves."
"Like on the $6 Million Man?"
"About the same. Would you like to be like Steve Austin when you grow up?"
"No way," Danny said as the nurse began to tape the wires to a number of tiny shaved spots on his scalp. "My daddy says that someday he'll get a short circuit, and then he'll be up the creek."
"I know that creek well," Dr. Edmonds said amiably. "I've been up it a few times myself, sans paddle. An EEG can tell us a lot of things, Danny."
"Like what?"
"Like, for instance, if you have epilepsy. That's a little problem where...
Yeah, I know what epilepsy is.
Really?
Sure. There was a kid in my nursery school back in Vermont. I went to nursery school when I was a little kid, and he had it. He wasn't supposed to use the flashboard.
What was that, Dan?
He had turned on the machine. Thin lines began to trace their way across graph paper.
It had all these lights, all different colors, and when you turned it on, some colors would flash, but not all. And you had to count the colors, and if you pushed the right button, you could turn it off. Brent couldn't use that.
That's because bright flashing lights sometimes cause an epileptic seizure.
You mean using the flashboard might have made Brent pitch a fit?
Edmonds and the nurse exchanged a brief, amused glance.
Inelegantly, but accurately put, Danny.
What?
I said you're right, except you should say seizure instead of pitch a fit. That's not nice. Okay, lie just as still as a mouse now.
Okay.
Danny, when you have these, whatever they are, do you ever recall seeing bright flashing lights before?
No.
Funny noises? Ringing or chimes like a doorbell?
Uh-uh.
How about a funny smell, maybe like oranges or sawdust? Or a smell like something rotten?
No, sir.
Sometimes do you feel like crying before you pass out, even though you don't feel sad?
No way.
That's fine, then.
Have I got epilepsy, Dr. Bill?
I don't think so, Danny. Just lie still. Almost done.
The machine hummed and scratched for another 5 minutes, and then Dr. Edmonds shut it off.
All done, guy, Edmonds said briskly. Let Sally get those electrodes off you and then come into the next room. I want to have a little talk with you, okay?
Sure.
Sally, you go ahead and give him a time test before he comes in.
All right.
Edmonds ripped off the long curl of paper the machine had extruded and went into the next room looking at it.
I'm going to prick your arm just a little, the nurse said after Danny had pulled up his pants. It's to make sure you don't have TB.
They gave me that at my school just last year,
Danny said without much hope.
But that was a long time ago and you're a big boy now, right?
I guess so,
Danny sighed and offered his arm up for sacrifice. When he had his shirt and shoes on, he went through the sliding door and into Dr. Edmonds' office. Edmonds was sitting on the edge of his desk, swinging his legs thoughtfully.
Hi, Danny.
Hi.
How's that hand now?
He pointed at Danny's left hand, which was lightly bandaged.
Pretty good.
Good. I looked at your EEG and it seems fine, but I'm going to send it to a friend of mine in Denver who makes his living reading those things. I just want to make sure.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about Tony, Dan.
Danny shuffled his feet.
He's just an invisible friend, he said. I made him up to keep me company.
Edmonds laughed and put his hands on Danny's shoulders.
Now that's what your mom and dad say, but this is just between us, guy. I'm your doctor. Tell me the truth, and I'll promise not to tell them unless you say I can.
Danny thought about it. He looked at Edmonds, and then with a small effort of concentration, he tried to catch Edmonds' thoughts, or at least the color of his mood, and suddenly he got an oddly comforting image in his head. File cabinets, their doors sliding shut one after another, locking with a click. Written on the small tabs in the center of each door was A through C, secret, D through G, secret, and so on. This made Danny feel a little easier. Cautiously, he said, I don't know who Tony is.
Is he your age?
No. He's at least 11. I think he might be even older. I've never seen him right up close. He might be old enough to drive a car.
You just see him at a distance, huh?
Yes, sir.
And he always comes just before you pass out?
Well, I don't pass out. It's like I go with him, and he shows me things.
What kind of things?
Well...
Danny debated for a moment, and then told Edmonds about Daddy's trunk with all his writing in it, and about how the movers hadn't lost it between Vermont and Colorado after all. It had been right under the stairs all along.
And your daddy found it where Tony said he would?
Oh, yes, sir. Only Tony didn't tell me. He showed me.
I understand.
Danny, what did Tony show you last night? When you locked yourself in the bathroom?
I don't remember, Danny said quickly.
Are you sure?
Yes, sir.
A moment ago I said you locked the bathroom door. But that wasn't right, was it? Tony locked the door.
No, sir. Tony couldn't lock the door because he isn't real. He wanted me to do it, so I did. I locked it. Does Tony always show you where lost things are?
No, sir. Sometimes he shows me things that are going to happen.
Really?
Sure. Like one time Tony showed me the amusements and wild animal park in Great Barrington. Tony said Daddy was going to take me there for my birthday. He did, too.
What else does he show you?
Danny frowned. Signs. He's always showing me stupid old signs. And I can't read them, hardly ever.
Why do you suppose Tony would do that, Danny?
I don't know. Danny brightened. But my daddy and mommy are teaching me to read, and I'm trying real hard.
So you can read Tony's signs?
Well, I really want to learn, but that too, yeah.
Do you like Tony, Danny?
Danny looked at the tile floor and said nothing.
Danny?
It's hard to tell, Danny said. I used to hope he'd come every day, because he always showed me good things, especially since Mommy and Daddy don't think about divorce anymore.
Dr. Edmund's gaze sharpened, but Danny didn't notice. He was looking hard at the floor, concentrating on expressing himself.
But now, whenever he comes, he shows me bad things. Awful things. Like in the bathroom last night. The things he shows me, they sting me like those wasps stung me. Only Tony's things sting me up here.
He cocked a finger gravely at his temple, a small boy unconsciously burlesquing suicide.
What things, Danny? I can't remember, Danny cried out, agonized. I'd tell you if I could. It's like I can't remember because it's so bad I don't want to remember. All I can remember when I wake up is Red Rum.
Red Drum or Red Rum?
Rum.
What's that, Danny?
I don't know.
Danny?
Yes, sir?
Can you make Tony come now?
I don't know. He doesn't always come. I don't even know if I want him to come anymore.
Try, Danny. I'll be right here.
Danny looked at Edmonds doubtfully. Edmonds nodded encouragement. Danny let out a long, sighing breath and nodded. But I don't know if it will work. I never did it with anyone looking at me before. And Tony doesn't always come anyway.
If he doesn't, he doesn't, Edmonds said. I just want you to try.
Okay.
He dropped his gaze to Edmonds' slowly swinging loafers and cast his mind outward toward his mommy and daddy. They were here someplace, right beyond that wall with the picture on it, as a matter of fact. In the waiting room where they had come in, sitting side by side but not talking, leafing through magazines, worried about him. He concentrated harder, his brow furrowing, trying to get into the feeling of his mommy's thoughts. It was always harder when they weren't right there in the room with him. Then he began to get it. Mommy was thinking about a sister, her sister. The sister was dead. His mommy was thinking that was the main thing that turned her mommy into such a bitch, into such an old biddy, because her sister had died. As a little girl, she was hit by a car. Oh, God, I could never stand anything like that again, like Aileen, but what if he's sick, really sick? Cancer, spinal meningitis, leukemia, brain tumor like John Gunther's son, or muscular dystrophy. Oh, geez, kids his age get leukemia all the time. Radium treatments, chemotherapy. We couldn't afford anything like that, but of course they just can't turn you out to die on the street, can they? And anyway, he's all right. All right, all right. You really shouldn't let yourself think, Danny, about Aileen and Danny, that car, Danny. But Tony wasn't there, only his voice. And as it faded, Danny followed it down into darkness, falling and tumbling down some magic hole between Dr. Bill's swinging loafers, past a loud knocking sound, further. A bathtub cruised silently by in the darkness with some horrible thing lolling in it, past a sound like sweetly chiming church bells, past a clock under a dome of glass. Then the dark was pierced feebly by a single light, festooned with cobwebs. The weak glow disclosed a stone floor that looked damp and unpleasant. Somewhere not far distant was a steady mechanical roaring sound, but muted, not frightening, soporific. It was the thing that would be forgotten, Danny thought with dreamy surprise. As his eyes adjusted to the gloom, he could see Tony just ahead of him, a silhouette. Tony was looking at something, and Danny strained his eyes to see what it was.
Your daddy. See your daddy?
Of course he did. How could he have missed him, even in the basement light's feeble glow? Daddy was kneeling on the floor,
casting the beam of a flashlight over old cardboard boxes and wooden crates. The cardboard boxes were mushy and old. Some of them had split open and spilled drifts of paper onto the floor. Newspapers, books, printed pieces of paper that looked like bills. His daddy was examining them with great interest. And then Daddy looked up and shone his flashlight in another direction. Its beam of light impaled another book, a large white one bound with gold string. The cover looked like white leather. It was a scrapbook. Danny suddenly needed to cry out to his daddy, to tell him to leave that book alone, that some books should not be opened. But his daddy was climbing toward it. The mechanical roaring sound, which he now recognized as the boiler at the Overlook, which Daddy checked 3 or 4 times every day, had developed an ominous, rhythmic hitching. It began to sound like pounding. And the smell of mildew and wet, rotting paper was changing to something else, the high, junipery smell of the bad stuff. It hung around his daddy like a vapor as he reached for the book and grasped it. Tony was somewhere in the darkness.
"This inhuman place makes human monsters. This inhuman place,"
repeating the same incomprehensible thing over and over,
"makes human monsters."
Falling through darkness again, now accompanied by the heavy, pounding thunder that was no longer the boiler, but the sound of a whistling mallet striking silk-papered walls, knocking out whiffs of plaster dust, crouching helplessly on the blue-black woven jungle rug.
"Come out!"
"This inhuman place,"
"and take your medicine,"
"makes human monsters."
With a gasp that echoed in his own head, he jerked himself out of the darkness. Hands were on him, and at first he shrank back, thinking that the dark thing in the Overlook of Tony's world had somehow followed him back into the world of real things, and then Dr. Edmonds was saying,
"You're all right, Danny. You're all right. Everything is fine."
Danny recognized the doctor, then his surroundings in the office. He began to shudder helplessly. Edmonds held him. When the reaction began to subside, Edmonds asked,
"You said something about monsters, Danny. What was it?"
"This inhuman place," he said gutturally. "Tony told me, this inhuman place makes...
He shook his head.
"Can't remember."
"Try."
"I can't."
"Did Tony come?"
"Yes."
"What did he show you?"
"Dark. Pounding. I don't remember."
"Where were you?"
"Leave me alone. I don't remember. Leave me alone."
He began to sob helplessly in fear and frustration. It was all gone, dissolved into a sticky mess like a wet bundle of paper, the memory unreadable. Edmonds went to the water cooler and got him a paper cup of water. Danny drank it, and Edmonds got him another one.
"Better?"
"Yes."
"Danny, I don't want to badger you, tease you about this, I mean, but can you remember anything about before Tony came?"
"My mommy,"
Danny said slowly.
"She's worried about me."
"Mothers always are, Guy."
"No. She had a sister that died when she was a little girl, Aileen. She was thinking about how Aileen got hit by a car and that made her worried about me. I don't remember anything else."
Edmonds was looking at him sharply.
"Just now she was thinking that? Out in the waiting room?"
"Yes, sir."
"Danny, how would you know that?"
"I don't know," Danny said wanly. "The Shining, I guess."
"The what?"
Danny shook his head very slowly.
"I'm awful tired. Can I go see my mommy and daddy? I don't want to answer any more questions. I'm tired and my stomach hurts."
"Are you going to throw up?"
"No, sir. I just want to go see my mommy and daddy."
"Okay, Dan." Edmund stood up. "You go on out and see them for a minute, then send them in so I can talk to them, okay?"
"Yes, sir."
"There are books out there to look at. You like books, don't you?"
"Yes, sir,"
Danny said dutifully.
"You're a good boy, Danny."
Danny gave him a faint smile.
"I can't find a thing wrong with him," Dr. Edmonds said to the Torrances. "Not physically. Mentally, he's bright and rather too imaginative. It happens. Children have to grow into their imaginations like a pair of oversized shoes. Danny's is still way too big for him. Ever had his IQ tested?"
"I don't believe in them," Jack said. "They straitjacket the expectations of both parents and teachers."
Dr. Edmonds nodded. "That may be. But if you did test him, I think you'd find he's right off the scale for his age group. His verbal ability, for a boy who is 5 going on 6, is amazing.
We don't talk down to him, Jack said with a trace of pride.
I doubt if you've ever had to in order to make yourself understood.
Edmonds paused, fiddling with a pen.
He went into a trance while I was with him, at my request, exactly as you described him in the bathroom last night. All his muscles went lax, his body slumped, his eyeballs rotated outward. Textbook auto-hypnosis. I was amazed. I still am.
The Torrances sat forward.
What happened?
Wendy asked tensely. And Edmonds carefully related Danny's trance, the muttered phrase from which Edmonds had only been able to pluck the words, monsters, the dark, the pounding. The aftermath of tears, near hysteria, and nervous stomach.
Tony again, Jack said.
What does it mean?
Wendy asked.
Have you any idea?
A few. You might not like them.
Go ahead anyway, Jack told him.
From what Danny told me, his invisible friend was truly a friend until you folks moved out here from New England. Tony has only become a threatening figure since that move. The pleasant interludes have become nightmarish. Even more frightening to your son because he can't remember exactly what the nightmares are about. That's common enough. We all remember our pleasant dreams more clearly than the scary ones. There seems to be a buffer somewhere between the conscious and the subconscious, and one hell of a blue nose lives in there. This sensor only lets through a small amount, and often what does come through is only symbolic. That's oversimplified, Freud, but it does pretty much describe what we know of the mind's interaction with itself.
You think moving has upset Danny that badly?
Wendy asked.
It may have, if the move took place under traumatic circumstances,
Edmund said.
Did it?
Wendy and Jack exchanged a glance. I was teaching at a prep school, Jack said slowly. I lost my job.
I see, Edmund said.
He put the pen he had been playing with firmly back in its holder.
There's more here, I'm afraid. It may be painful to you. Your son seems to believe you two have seriously contemplated divorce. He spoke of it in an offhand way, but only because he believes you are no longer considering it.
Jack's mouth dropped open, and Wendy recoiled as if slapped. The blood drained from her face.
We'd never even discussed it, she said. Not in front of him, not even in front of each other.
I think it's best if you understand everything, Doctor, Jack said. Shortly after Danny was born, I became an alcoholic. I'd had a drinking problem all the way through college. It subsided a little after Wendy and I met, cropped up worse than ever after Danny was born, and the writing I consider to be my real work was going badly. When Danny was 3 and a half, he spilled some beer on a bunch of papers I was working on. Papers I was shuffling around, anyway, and I... Well, shit. His voice broke, but his eyes remained dry and unflinching. It sounds so goddamn beastly, said out loud. I broke his arm, turning him around to spank him. 3 months later, I gave up drinking. I haven't touched it since.
I see, Edmund said neutrally. I knew the arm had been broken, of course. It was set well.
He pushed back from his desk a little and crossed his legs.
If I may be frank, it's obvious that he's been in no way abused since then. Other than the stings, there's nothing on him but the normal bruises and scabs that any kid has in abundance.
Of course not,
Wendy said hotly.
Jack didn't mean...
No, Wendy, Jack said. I meant to do it. I guess someplace inside I really did mean to do that to him, or something even worse. He looked back at Edmonds again.
You know something, Doctor?
This is the first time the word divorce has been mentioned between us, and alcoholism, and child-beating. 3 firsts in 5 minutes.
That may be at the root of the problem, Edmund said. I am not a psychiatrist. If you want Danny to see a child psychiatrist, I can recommend a good one who works out of the Mission Ridge Medical Center in Boulder. But I am fairly confident of my diagnosis. Danny is an intelligent, imaginative, perceptive boy. I don't believe he would have been as upset by your marital problems as you believed. Small children are great acceptors. They don't understand shame or the need to hide things.
Jack was studying his hands. Wendy took one of them and squeezed it.
But he sensed the things that were wrong. Chief among them, from his point of view, was not the broken arm, but the broken or breaking link between you two. He mentioned divorce to me, but not the broken arm. When my nurse mentioned the set to him, he simply shrugged it off. It was no pressure thing. It happened a long time ago, is what I think he said.
That kid, Jack muttered.
His jaws were clamped together, the muscles in the cheeks standing out. We don't deserve him.
You have him, all the same, Edmund said dryly. At any rate, he retires into a fantasy world from time to time. Nothing unusual about that. Lots of kids do. As I recall, I had my own invisible friend when I was Danny's age, a talking rooster named Chug-Chug. Of course, no one could see Chug-Chug but me. I had two older brothers who often left me behind, and in such a situation, Chug-Chug came in mighty handy. And of course, you two must understand why Danny's invisible friend is named Tony instead of Mike, or Hal, or Dutch.
Yes, Wendy said.
Have you ever pointed it out to him?
No, Jack said. Should we?
Why bother? Let him realize it in his own time, by his own logic. You see, Danny's fantasies were considerably deeper than those that grow around the ordinary invisible friend syndrome, but he felt he needed Tony that much more. Tony would come and show him pleasant things, sometimes amazing things, always good things. Once Tony showed him where Daddy's lost trunk was, under the stairs. Another time Tony showed him that Mommy and Daddy were going to take him to an amusement park for his birthday.
At Great Barrington, Wendy cried. But how could he know those things? It's eerie, the things he comes out with sometimes. Almost as if
he had second sight? Edmunds asked, smiling.
He was born with a call, Wendy said weakly.
Edmund's smile became a good, hearty laugh. Jack and Wendy exchanged a glance and then also smiled, both of them amazed at how easy it was. Danny's occasional lucky guesses about things was something else they had not discussed much.
Next you'll be telling me he can levitate, Edmund said, still smiling.
No, I'm afraid not. It's not extrasensory, but good old human perception, which in Danny's case is unusually keen. Mr. Torrance, he knew your trunk was under the stairs because you had looked everywhere else. Process of elimination, what? It's so simple, Ellery Queen would laugh at it. Sooner or later, you would have thought of it yourself. As for the amusement park at Great Barrington, whose idea was that originally, yours or his?
His, of course, Wendy said. They advertised on all the morning children's programs. He was wild to go. But the thing is, Doctor, we couldn't afford to take him, and we had told him so.
Then a men's magazine I'd sold a story to back in 1971 sent a check for $50, Jack said. They were reprinting the story in an annual or something, so we decided to spend it on Danny. Edmund shrugged. Wish fulfillment plus a lucky coincidence.
God damn it, I bet that's just right, Jack said.
Edmund smiled a little. And Danny himself told me that Tony often showed him things that never occurred. Visions based on faulty perception, that's all. Danny is doing subconsciously what these so-called mystics and mind-readers do quite consciously and cynically. I admire him for it. If life doesn't cause him to retract his antennae, I think he'll be quite a man. Wendy nodded. Of course she thought Danny would be quite a man. But the doctor's explanation struck her as glib. It tasted more like margarine than butter. Edmunds had not lived with him. He had not been there when Danny found lost buttons, told her that maybe the TV guide was under the bed, that he thought he better wear his rubbers to nursery school even though the sun was out, and later that day they had walked home under her umbrella through the pouring rain. Edmunds couldn't know of the curious way Danny had of pre-guessing them both. She would decide to have an unusual evening cup of tea, go out in the kitchen, and find her cup out with a tea bag in it. She would remember that the books were due at the library and find them all neatly piled up on the hall table, her library card on top. Or Jack would take it into his head to wax the Volkswagen and find Danny already out there, listening to tinny top 40 music on his crystal radio as he sat on the curb to watch. Aloud, she said,
then why the nightmares now? Why did Tony tell him to lock the bathroom door?
I believe it's because Tony has outlived his usefulness, Edmund said. He was born, Tony, not Danny, at a time when you and your husband were straining to keep your marriage together. Your husband was drinking too much. There was the incident of the broken arm. The ominous quiet between you.
Ominous quiet, yes. That phrase was the real thing, anyway. The stiff, tense meals where the only conversation had been please pass the butter, or Danny eat the rest of your carrots, or may I be excused, please.
The nights when Jack was gone and she had lain down dry-eyed on the couch while Danny watched TV. The mornings when she and Jack had stalked around each other like two angry cats with a quivering, frightened mouse between them.
It all rang true. Dear God, do old scars ever stop hurting?